Chapter 1. Hollis. Hollis Johns contemplated the tree, raking the line of his jaw with his fingers. He raised his blade to the base of the lowermost ancient and gnarled branch, positioning it carefully between the trunk and the scalloped oval knot. His muscles tensed, and he was, at last, ready to sever the old limb from 58 years of growth. Then he thought the better of it, again, and returned the shears to the desk. Another slug of wine and some more contemplation. Deeper this time, much deeper. The Tao of the bonsai was patience, discipline, and wisdom. Great wisdom.
Hollis?
His wife's voice was thick and muffled in the distance, burrowing its way down two floors into his leather-appointed basement study. His sanctuary. His retreat. His bunker.
Hollis?
She tried again. Sighing, Hollis swung his left arm over the back of his chair and reached for the volume knob of the stereo with two fingers. The room swelled like an orchestral lung. It was Schubert tonight. But anyone would do, really. Susan would eventually get tired of calling out his name and would come down to fetch him. She would be wearing that look of labored marital decorum, a thin, elastic politeness stretched over her face like overtaxed sandwich wrap, her muscles straining to contain exasperation and anger and decades of complaint. A supremely unconvincing facade that, Hollis knew, she meant to be unconvincing. And he would be equally unconvincing. "Oh, sorry, I didn't hear you," was all he needed. Schubert would do fine. It was a shame, he thought, that these pretensions, his and hers, were necessary at all. This was not the way he wanted to relate. He hated that word, relate. Communicate? No. He hated that word, too. Interact. Yes, this was not the way he wanted to interact with his wife. Why? Because directness and honesty in all things were greatly preferred. Another swallow of wine and a one-quarter turn of the potted tree before him. The sides of the octagonal planter were a slick, dark green like wet evening grass. Through his fingertips he felt the roughened porcelain bottom of the planter scrape against the wooden desk. The lowermost branch of the old tree rotated into the pool of buttery light beneath the desk lamp. Hollis narrowed his eyes and laid the branch across his outstretched palm. Then he sighed. The Japanese understand. They understand what it means to live an honest life. That is the benefit of such an ancient culture. Wisdom is a crop that grows very, very slowly. It thrives only in old, mature soil. Americans are such an infantile culture. We cultivate infantile crops, not small. Infantile. Big and loud and brash and self-satisfied and unruly, like hyper-fertilized weeds growing in an undisciplined crawl-out of the gardens and across the floors and up the very walls of the Republic. We are so slavishly obsessed with youth. We eschew anything and everything that is around long enough to have any value. Why keep a veteran of the loan department when you can have a slick kid with a flashy smile and a head full of hair and an MBA for a diaper? The older you are, the less value you have. That's all there is to it. Wisdom cannot flourish in our culture. Our soil is too alkaline.
Hollis?
And without wisdom, there is no honesty. The wise man knows that pretensions deceive the self as well as others. No, that's not quite right. With the flesh of his thumb, Hollis stroked the branch, twisted and bent with age at an angle irregular to the rest of the tree. The wise man knows that pretensions deceive the self and that what others believe about us does not matter. That was really the key, he thought. Why do we care so much about what others think of us? Why was that so important? That conceit, that the opinions of others matter, was at the root of all pretension. The honest man, the wise man, just does not give a damn about how he is perceived by others. He is who he is. He is a scoundrel. He is a knave. He is a hero. He is a bastard. He is a regular old chap. But he is not a fool who, for the sake of another's impression, ultimately deceives himself into believing he is somebody he is not. He is honest and forthright in the world only because he has freed himself from the burden of giving a damn.
Hollis!
Susan had now crossed the threshold between a beseeching summons and a domestic yodel, and this prompted in her husband a heavy sigh and another swallow of wine, two acts that experience had honed into a single, almost elegant process, exhaling through the nose directly into the glass and a simultaneous draining of wine over the tongue. Akahito Takada was such a man, he thought, refilling his glass. Old enough to be wise, wise enough to be honest, honest enough not to give a damn about what anyone else thought of him, even his family. Hollis had only known Akahito Takada a week. 6 days, really, living as a guest in his magnificent Tokyo home. But the intensity of that exposure had been ample. Akahito Takada was a real Japanese man. Very modern, yet strong with tradition and imbued with the wisdom of old. President of a huge international bank, Hayakugo Bank could have swallowed Ohio First Securities and Credit like a little sushi roll. And yet, a man who meditates every morning and evening. A man who cultivates his own garden. A man who speaks very little, and even then, only in a soft whisper of a voice. A man with a beautiful and intelligent wife, and daughters who respect his authority. Not in a dictatorial sense, not out of fear, out of respect for his undeniable sagacity. Akahito Takada did not have to endure daily tests and petty challenges to his place in the family. Izume Takada clearly loved him, and he her. They had been married, 45 years? And she was no dullard. God, no. Izume was a doctor, for Christ's sake. And yet she respected Akahito's place in the family. It wasn't about dominance or subjugation or sexism. It just wasn't. It was about respect. Respect. Hollis gave the tiny old tree another quarter turn, inspecting with a fingernail the pits and crenellations along the trunk near the base where it fanned out into roots, slipping beneath the plot of mossy soil. The difference, he thought, was not so much in the families themselves. Susan was not a doctor, but she was smart. And she was a damned good woman. He had married her 38 years ago, and he would do it again. Sure he would, at the drop of a hat. Right this instant, if need be. Seriously.
Hollis!
He had never met Akahito's daughters. One of them was going to school at, he forgets the name, the Japanese equivalent of Harvard, and the other, Suki or Yuki or something like that, he could still remember her photograph, was clearly sharp as a razor. Not terribly unlike Tilly or David. Well, there was Ben. She was different from Ben. But everyone was different from Ben. To a certain extent, kids were kids, so, no, the difference was not so much the rest of the family. The difference was between Akahito Takada and Hollis Johns. Not in who they were, for they were actually very much the same in most respects. Weren't they? Yes. Yes, they were. Akahito was older and far more successful, but still, when you get right down to it, very much the same. The difference was in how they carried themselves. Hollis had made the mistake of caring too much. Akahito Takada simply was. Akahito Takada did not ask permission to be himself. Akahito Takada did not compromise his integrity or his wisdom. Akahito Takada offers himself up as he is. No wheedling, no backpedaling, no counseling. And because there is no other option, the world accepts Akahito Takada as he is. In the entire 6 days of the conference, in the evenings at the Takada home, when it was just Akahito and Izume and himself, drinking tea or sake under the paper lanterns at the end of the garden by the lotus pond, had Izume ever challenged her husband? Even once? No, not once. Had she ever tried to embarrass Akahito by explaining that something he had just said was contrary to something he had said a week earlier, or that some prior conduct known only to her suggested that he was being insincere? No. Had she ever once hinted that Akahito Takada had had too much to drink? No. When Akahito asked Izume to excuse them so that he could talk about matters of business and banking, did Izume object or protest, or even look wounded? No. Because that's Akahito, and Izume accepts him as he is. She was the perfect picture of grace, beautiful and delicate and soft and, in her own way, in her acceptance, very wise.
Hollis.
And what about Akahito's daughter? Yuki or Zuki or something like that. Do you think she ever felt free to refuse to come home until they had acceded to her demand, that her parents see a marriage counselor? Of course not. The very idea. That is not acceptance. That is not wisdom. That is petulance. That is the height of arrogance and disrespect to one's parents. Sweet little Yuzi or Luki or whatever would never dream of such tantrums. Not because she isn't capable of them. All children are capable of tantrums. But Zumi, whatever, knows deep in her marrow that such conduct is hopelessly ineffective with the likes of her father, Akahito Takada. She knows her father is too wise to be manipulated in that way. She knows that her father really does not give a damn what she thinks she knows about the state of his marriage. She knows enough to accept what she cannot control, and she is wise. Akahito had taught his family well.
Hollis!
And that really was the problem, wasn't it? Hollis Johns had failed to teach his family. He had unwittingly cultivated a belief that they had a say in who he was, that they had a right to bargain about his opinions and his intentions and the meaning of his own experiences, like they were entitled to own and control a piece of him. Well, not Ben. Ben accepted him completely, challenged nothing. Ben respected him. And wasn't that fucking ironic? The wisest one in the family was the one that was developmentally impaired. The rest of them should take a clue or two from Ben.
Well, there you are. I have been calling and calling.
Oh? Sorry, I didn't hear you. You know, the music.
I called upstairs, then I went to the bedroom, and I called and called, then outside the driveway because I thought you might be watering the plants.
It's the music, Susan. You don't need to get testy. I'm just asking because I was calling and calling. What do you need? Maybe you should turn the music down a little so in case someone needs... What do you need, Susan?
Should we invite the Blomfields to Tilly's party?
That's why you've been calling me for the last 20 minutes.
Yes. I thought you didn't hear me.
Didn't you just say that you were calling me?
I didn't say I'd been calling you for 20 minutes. You clearly heard me.
Susan, Tilly won't even be here. Why are we inviting anyone? How many people are you planning to drag over here?
Drag? They're all dying to come. Jesus, Hollis, Tilly has been nominated for a great honor. Don't you even care? You can bet Tilly cares. You can bet David cares. There should be some recognition, don't you think? I know there's this thing between you and Tilly, but still, Hollis, can't you put that aside even just for this one accomplishment? Don't you care even that much?
He listened, as if at the other end of a long tunnel. He watched her lips move, wrinkling the sandwich wrap facade. It isn't their fault, he thought to himself. It isn't their fault. Not really, anyway. He would take responsibility. This was ultimately all his doing. Unknowingly, by caring too much about what they thought of him over the years, he had nurtured a belief that the question of Hollis Johns was always up for debate. And that must be very frustrating for them, because the question of Hollis Johns is never up for debate. There is no question. Hollis Johns is who he is. Take him or leave him. No, I don't care, Susan. Not even that much. You do whatever you want to do. Invite the Blomfields, or don't. I don't care. Invite all of Columbus. Invite all of Japan.
Japan? Honestly, Hollis, you need to turn off the music and come up out of your cave and rejoin society. You've become crotchety before my very eyes.
Well, you can get emotional about it if you want, but you might try thinking this through.
That again. I'm not thinking enough for you. You do all the real thinking. Is that it?
Susan,
just because I fold sheets and cook food and raise children rather than go to an office,
we both raise our children,
doesn't mean I can't think things through. I have a brain. I've always had a brain. Valedictorian in my high school, and very close to the same in college. Oh, did I say something to amuse you? Did I? Hello?
Yes.
Why are you smiling?
Hmm?
Why are you smiling?
Just am.
Was there something in what I just said that you find humorous? I did a hell of a lot better in college than you did.
If you say so.
I'm not having this ridiculous discussion. Can we just talk about this party?
No.
Will you either talk louder or turn the music down? It's really hard to hear you.
No.
No what?
No to everything.
This is the wine talking again. You know it and I know it. I'm inviting the Blomfields. Ruth will be insulted if I don't, even though she's not a big fan of Tilly's.
Then why invite her?
What? Hollis, you are almost whispering. Why what?
Nothing.
No, you said something.
No.
No what?
No to everything.
His wife closed the door with a tautly stretched smile and a wave expertly crafted to tell him that she had had it and was terminating the skirmish before it got any worse.
Hollis emptied his glass and reconsidered the tree. Suddenly, it was so clear. The muscles in his hand pulsed around the handles of the metal pruner like a heartbeat.
Snip. Clunk.
Patience. Discipline.
And above all, wisdom.